Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 92 of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today, we've got two segments for you. First up, myself and Zach talk about Project X Zone. And after that, Neil and Justin talk about Shin Megami Tensei 4, which they both have copies of. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Right now, I'm joined by Zach Miller.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy. And we're going to be talking about Project X Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The recent Monolith Soft-developed crossover game featuring characters from Capcom, Namco Bandai, and Sega franchises.
Yeah.
Which is just absolutely crazy.
First in this series to come to the States, I believe.
Yeah, there was, Namco, cross Bandai, I guess is, or, well, no, I'm sorry, Namco cross Capcom, or Capcom cross Namco, one way or the other.
Right.
And for the PS2, and I think that was just in Japan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, this is the first to come. And it's just absolutely balls out crazy.
Yeah.
And I feel like you can tell playing it that they kind of maybe never thought it would come to America, or if it was coming to America, they really weren't concerned about it, because like half the characters are from games that only came out in Japan.
Yeah.
Or at least are just very obscure over here.
Or they have incredibly Japanese names.
Yeah, everyone does. And that's one thing too, I love that like, probably like 80% of the dialogue is voice acted, but it's all Japanese voice actors, so it might as well not be voice acted, because yeah, it's not going to mean anything to you.
And
but,
even,
you know,
even during fights, they're all screaming Japanese things.
Yeah. So, it's cool, though, that, like, they put that production value in, at least on the Japanese side of things.
And it must have been a bear to localize over here.
Yeah, I would think so.
There's so
I
mean, much dialogue.
A ton of text. I mean, between battles, there's just, like, endless conversations.
With a plot that makes no sense.
Yeah. So a little bit, I guess, about what's going on in the game. So Project X Zone is a tactical, RPG. Not entirely unlike Fire Emblem, but with a few little changes. Where you have this portal stone's been stolen from this family, these two characters that are created for the game. They're not from anything else. And, all of a sudden now portals are opening up, like, between dimensions, and we have characters from all these different franchises, kind of spilling into the same world. And then teleporting between different worlds. So you'll go, like, between worlds from different games, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And there's over, like, 60 playable characters. And, I mean, seriously, just from everything. Like, I don't know. Zach, I don't know how many of the characters you recognize, but yeah, I definitely don't recognize.
Maybe half of them.
Yeah, half of it would probably be even like on the upper end for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got like, especially the Namco side, like everything from Capcom I'm pretty familiar with. And then like some of the Sega stuff, but the Namco stuff is what really loses me.
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't have, maybe it's not as popular in the East. I'm surprised they don't have more like Soul Calibur stuff, because that seems like it would fit in really well with this game with giant swords and stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, you already have all these, like, characters from all these other fighting games, Virtua Fighter and Street Fighter, and yeah, that's a good point. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's not a very big Japanese series. I'm not sure. But you know, the characters that you do have that are totally recognizable are really great. I mean, you've got, like, Frank West from Dead Rising.
He's covered Wars, you know.
Yeah. Jill and Chris from Resident Evil. Fresh from Resident Evil Revelations, no less. And all their, like,
they will come back, right? They've disappeared for a while in my game.
Yeah, they come back late. Okay. Like, yeah, you'll get them, like, by about the 20th chapter, you have every character.
Oh, okay. I know X and Zero are in there.
Yeah, they're the last two you get.
Oh, nice.
But you get them, like chapter 20. But yeah, so Chris and Jill are pretty cool.
Ken and Ryu.
Ken and Ryu, yeah, Chun-Li. Morgan.
Another Darkstalkers. There's actually a lot of Darkstalkers characters in this game.
Yeah, there are.
I only recognize like three of them, because there have been many more entries in that series over there than here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge series out there.
Dante.
Dante, yeah. Yeah, Devil May Cry, yeah. That's a good one. Arthur from Super like Ghost and
Goblin.
That's
right, yep.
That's pretty cool. I like, that's a good touch.
Those two dot hack characters who I don't really know anything about, but I recognize.
Did you ever, you never played any of those games?
No, I've heard they're good though.
I had a friend who got really into it. I think the big deal was that like your save data would carry over from game to game.
Ooh.
It was like, it, yeah, they, when they started the series, it was meant to be serialized. I mean, it was kind of like a precursor to like these sort of like episodes games will be, you know, released in now where you download each episode.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so each game was connected and your data was supposed to carry over. But I don't know if the last one ever came out here even.
Oh.
The last one might have only been in Japan, but I'm not positive, but I know he was really into the first two.
Nice. Those are PS2 games,
right? Yes. Okay. Yeah. And then just a host of other characters. But what I really appreciate about the characters I do recognize, and I'm sure if you're more familiar, the more familiar you are with the game, I'm sure that you appreciate the writing even more. But what's really great is just sort of the, like, I don't know how it jokes about each franchise.
Yeah.
And it's really just to kind of poke fun at everything. I mean, like, you have Frank West who, every time you meet a new female character, he's like taking pictures of her and
right.
You get the like perfect erotica rating from Dead Rising, which is great.
And it took three pictures of Kaguyu.
Yeah. Who is from Endless Frontier, a DS game. And she, I mean, all the female characters in this game pretty much have tits out. But like hers are like three times the size.
Her and Morrigan, yeah.
Yeah, of like the other female characters. And I love that the full cast is like always shocked to see her and sort of remarks about it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got like after banter dialogue where Chun-Li's like saying maybe she should put on some more muscle and Morgan's kind of saying like, well, if you do that, you're gonna lose your form, your body shape, which is kind of a little, you know, funny little comment because I think we've all, after what, Street Fighter 4, there's a lot of conversation about Chun-Li's like huge giant legs. So I think that's like poking a little bit of fun at that. And I mean, that's just like present throughout the whole game.
Yeah. There's the funniest thing for me was when they came back from the God Eater world. That's another game that I think is only Japan.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with it.
But when they come back from that world, somebody's like, oh, it's so nice to be in a world where there aren't giant holes in buildings anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good. I mean, there's a lot of that. Like a lot of sort of nods to past franchises. And one nice touch too, if you're unfamiliar with some of these characters and stuff, which you definitely will be unless you live in Japan, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
There's the Crosspedia, which is a really nice touch. I don't know how much you've read it.
How do you access that?
From the like between battle screen where you can save and equip items and stuff.
Yeah.
If you press X, it brings up like a second tier of options.
Oh.
And the Crosspedia is there.
I'll have to look at that.
It's this great like encyclopedia with every single, not a, like hero and villain that you meet, as well as like, I don't know, like items and stuff that are really neither, but that characters talk about and mention.
And oh, that's
so
cool.
By reading that, you can like learn all about the relationships between the characters you don't know, and find out what games they're from and all that stuff. So it's super helpful.
Wow.
Yeah, and I read it all the time. And it just keeps adding, like every time you meet a new character, there'll be a new entry in there, and you can read some background information. So
that's pretty
cool
nice,
stuff.
Since like you say, most of these characters and places are going to be unfamiliar to a Western audience.
Right, and not only are the characters unfamiliar, but they do sort of like reference the games they're from and like the worlds they're from and stuff, so it's easy to get kind of like lost or at least just uninterested in what they're saying because, you know, it doesn't mean anything to you if you're not familiar with the franchise. Now, as great as the writing is, I think the story's kind of awful.
I don't understand what's happening. I'm just along for the ride.
Not at all. I mean, playing the game, every chapter is basically like this. So the characters arrive like in some new time or place they don't recognize. Eventually they figure out where they are. Enemies pop up and you have to go defeat the enemies. Halfway through defeating the enemies, more enemies show up and then usually like a boss character or two. You beat all that. And then it's like all the characters are talking like, well, should we jump into this next dimension? And then they do. And then the whole thing just like repeats.
Yep.
And you basically do that for 40 hours. So like that's kind of unfortunate. But it's not a huge deal because the game, once you're in it, is actually so much fun to play.
Oh yeah. Describe how you play it.
Yeah, the combat system really surprised me, and I haven't played Endless Frontier, but since reviewing the game, I reviewed it over at IGN, if you're looking for the review, since reviewing the game, like, I've had people tell me that the combat's pretty much entirely lifted from Endless Frontier, but you have this grid-based map system, not unlike Fire Emblem or something like that, and you move your characters around, and when you initiate an attack, it sort of turns into this, like, light fighting game, like kind of mini game where you're inputting, you're inputting different button commands. So like you press A or you press forward and A, back and A, down A, up A.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's as complex as it gets, but.
And
each
Y.
Of those,
Y for your special attack.
Y for your special attack. And then you're inputting attacks. And if you like use a variety of them, if you use like one of each, so if you don't just keep pressing A, but you do A, up A, down A, whatever, you get an extra bonus attack if you use all of them.
I think you have to time it right so the enemy never lands.
Well, there's that too. There's juggling, yeah. So you can, if you time him right, you'll keep juggling the enemy, so he'll never get a chance to, like, reuse his shield or block your attacks or
that's
anything.
Right.
And if you time it just right, you'll actually get critical hits, which will fill up your XP bar faster, which you use to do skills and then your super attack. But, like, it's just fun. I mean, it's simple, but it's fun. And then the actual, like, fighting with the sprites, I mean, it's just, like, balls out crazy.
Oh, yeah. It's, like, mind-blowing how much is going on screen.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like, just particle effects everywhere, and, like, these sprites were just jumping all over the screen, like, just going crazy. And then once you factor in the fact that you can do solo attacks and then support attacks, which solo attacks are when you have a third party member attached to a group of two characters, and then support attacks are when you're standing next to a group of characters, you call them in to actually help you. And it ends up looking kind of like some just a crazy like scene from like Marvel versus Capcom.
Yeah, and there's really no slowdown. That's amazing to me.
No, yeah, it just keeps moving and it just smoothly and it looks great. And but yeah, it's just like the just chaos. I mean, you can have like up to five characters just going crazy on screen, just mutilating everything. And yeah, but it's fun. It's simple, but it's really addictive, and I've enjoyed it. You know, all the way through. I never really got tired of fighting.
No.
Despite, like, the repetitious chapters and the lack of story, for the most part.
Yeah, I think it keeps me going. I mean, you're right, it is, like, incredibly repetitious, but the animation is so wonderful, and you kick so much ass that it's hard, you feel very empowered by the whole thing. I mean, even against bosses. Bosses take, like, forever to kill.
And
when,
they do.
When they do their super attacks, they take off, like, 2/3 of a guy's health.
Yeah.
But you've got all these other characters ganging up on him too, and it just feels really good.
Right, and it's good because you have this game where you have all these like heroes from these other franchises who have already accomplished so much within their franchises. I mean, it would be dumb if you pulled them in and then just like stripped them down and you're like really starting like at level one and your characters are weak or something, you know? I mean, the fact that it just starts balls out crazy feels right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's appropriate, and that's what you want to see. I mean, you don't want to be, like, grinding to get, like, Ryu to, I don't know, use the Hadouken or something. You know, like, you just want to be able to do it from the start, and you can.
Although it does help to grind. Like, in all these fights, there's always a lot more enemies than you have to kill.
Right.
But I kill them all. Or I kill as many as I can so I can level up my guys, and that's just me.
Me too. Plus there's items on the map that you can go pick up that'll, like, give you little perks, like extra damage or defense and stuff. Which is another interesting thing too. I mean, this game like has stripped away all the stuff you kind of associate with a tactical RPG. Like if you're thinking something of Final Fantasy Tactics or Fire Emblem, usually between like story battles, there's an overworld map. You can go to shops and buy supplies, and you can go do random battles and stuff like that to grind. But in this game, like it just moves from one chapter to the next. There's no overworld map. There's no shops. It's just like one story battle to the other.
I do kind of wish you could buy supplies somewhere.
Yeah, because you run low quickly.
And you also can't pause. Can you pause? Because if you press start in the middle of a fight, your turn ends. And if you press start in the overworld or on the map, it just tries to switch between multi-attack and solo attack.
Right. I know if you press X, you can pull up a menu.
Right.
And then you can actually quick save.
Yes, you can.
And you could do that. But yeah, there's not necessarily like a pause. I mean, I guess you just close the system.
That's what I do.
Yeah. But that's pretty much it. But yeah, so it's just kind of, it's a neat little game. And it really surprised me. Like, it wasn't necessarily on my radar. But I was surprised with how much I really enjoyed it.
I wouldn't have given it a second thought if they hadn't released the demo. It was a really good demo.
See, I was the other way. Like, the demo didn't really resonate with me. Huh? I think because I didn't recognize a lot of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, jumping into it, like, I was kind of just like, there was already so much of the battle system, like, at your disposal. I like playing the actual game and how they sort of slowly give you, like, I don't know, like, teach you all the different things you can do.
Yeah,
like,
they got
a lot more into it that way. So, yeah, but I'm totally in love with the game. And
and all the fan service is great. And I think we have different definitions of fan service. Your definition of fan service is like Subspace Emissary, where, oh, my God, Pikachu and Samus are fighting together. Holy crap.
Yeah.
And my definition of fan service is when, like, Morrigan activates her super attack and she's just jiggling from every angle.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
A lot of that in the game.
The super attacks especially, because the super attacks, while you have, like, the in-game sprites going crazy.
Just going nuts.
There'll be these high-res images that pop up on the screen, too.
Like character portraits, yeah.
And they're sort of, like, moving. It's not, like, fluid motion, but it's kind of, I don't know.
It's like when you do a super attack in Street Fighter or I don't know, what else? Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is the same way.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, we've got this, like, these really high-res images that pop up. And in them, any female character always is, yeah, just, like, just pull out, jiggle. Or if they're a character who doesn't have big boobs, then it's, like, an ass shot.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Always. One or the other.
They find
or
a
both,
way.
Or both, if you get a character who has both.
They find a way to make it a little perverted.
But it's true, and we were talking about beforehand, but when I was reviewing the game, when I was playing it before it was out last week, like, I just kept thinking, like, Zach is gonna love this game. I know you don't usually play tactical RPGs.
Never.
Like, I didn't know if you really knew anything about, like, the majority of the series this game pulled from, but I was like, if Zach just saw this game, he would fall in love with it. Because there is a ton of that.
And you are
talking
correct.
To, like, when characters are talking, there's, images of them that will pop up on the screen. And there's, like, a few different ones. So there's, you know, like, them just looking straight on. There's, like, a skeptical one. And then I swear with the female characters, there's always one where they're, like, bending over. So they're, like, tits are just out. And then there's one where they're, like, back is to the screen for some reason. So then it's just, yeah, like, another ass shot.
Giant ass shot,
That's the game is, like, 90% of that.
And meanwhile, all the male characters have, like, two. They have, like, a stoic look and maybe a kind of amused look.
Yeah, and, they're, like, laughing. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. This game is made for Zach Miller.
It's really too much. Did you get the special edition, by the way?
No, because when I reviewed it, they just sent me a download code.
Oh, okay. It's pretty pretty tame. It's like a soundtrack CD, which I'll never listen to, and a poster that's maybe the size of my computer screen.
Okay.
And an art book. Which is just the character portraits, nothing else.
Mm.
So that was kind of disappointing, but it doesn't cost any more than the normal version.
Are there two versions? When I was at Target the other day, I was looking for the game, and all they had was the special edition.
Yeah, I think it's like an Atlas game that way. Like, they don't produce any other kind.
That's what I thought. This will be the first run, and when it's gone probably.
Yeah. So you should go out and get it. Although you can get it on the eShop now.
You can download it. Yeah. So, yeah, it might not be bad to buy it that way, though, because I'm sure this shit will be worth a lot down the road.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee it's going to be a limited run type of game.
Well, after we talked on Twitter, I looked up Endless Frontier, which is a DS game, which is the only other game like this to be released here, and it's $168 on Amazon. I don't even think it's new.
No, I'm sure it's used, yeah. Yeah, pretty wild.
Those are some Shantae numbers there.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that about does it.
Quick, who's your favorite character combo?
Pairing. Gosh. Let me think. Well, I really like... For some reason, I really like Chun-Li and Morrigan.
Yeah, they make a good team.
Yeah, I love Frank West. I'm not super familiar with his partner, who's from
Darkstalkers. I don't even know how to say her name.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's crazy Japanese. but I love Frank West. Like, his attacks are just funny. I mean, it's all stuff from Dead Rising. You know, he's like throwing like shit from the mall at characters and stuff, and he jokes about like making like getting juice after the battle for the deal and like just stuff like that. I mean, he's just really funny. And then I like Mega Man and Zero.
I haven't gotten them yet.
Yeah, well, X and Zero, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
And then Jill and Chris. I mean, it's just the ones I'm most familiar with.
Yeah.
I find. What about you?
I was gonna say Chun-Li and Morgan too. They're such a odd pairing. But they're very funny together.
They are.
They have good banter, and their attacks just kind of gel really well.
Yeah, well, because Chun-Li's so like serious and like, you know, all about the mission, and then like Morgan kind of doesn't really give a fuck. Like, she's just kind of having fun.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
It is funny the way they play off of each other.
Yeah, and they have I love their super attack where Morgan like catapults the bad guy way up into the air with some energy blast, and then, you know, 200 feet in the air, Chun-Li like jumps in with his mega kick and kicks the dude in the face. And it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, the special attacks are really amazing. Even if you're not going to buy this game, I would recommend just like going to YouTube and watching the special attacks to kind of get an idea of like what we're talking about here. But they're just crazy. The whole game's crazy.
Yeah, it really is.
But yeah, like, I think that'll do it. Even if you're not totally familiar with a lot of the franchises, you know, if you just know the big ones like Resident Evil, Street Fighter, I think it's worth playing.
Me too.
If you're a fan of like tactical RPGs and you don't mind, I mean, just like anime hijinks, because I mean that's really what it is. If you're not familiar with the characters, just anime tropes. I mean, with the female characters like we're talking about, who's just kind of strutting around, and then just some of the humor and stuff. It's very anime inspired, but
and it's not, I wouldn't be playing it if it were some deep, you know, real tactical RPG, like, I don't know, name one that's really the opposite end of this.
I don't know, like Valkyria
Ogre
Chronicles
Battle
or something.
Or Valkyria Chronicles,
even like the older Fire Emblem games.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't be playing it if it were anything like this, but this is like the world's lightest tactical RPG.
Yeah, it's not overly difficult, and the battle system's just fun, and it's easy to get into, and, you know, it's so streamlined with all the extra stuff removed, like the overworld maps and random battles and shops and stuff. I mean, it's just, like, straight action.
Yep.
And it's fun. It is. It really works.
Love it.
So I do. I recommend it.
Me too.
So, awesome. All right. Well, that will do it. So, Zach, thanks for being here.
Of course.
Talking about some Project X Zone. And, we'll talk to you guys later.
I'm going to go play some right now.
I think I will too.
Yeah.
Welcome to a segment here on Connectivity, where I'm going to talk about Shin Megami Tensei 4 with our reviewer, Justin Baker.
Hello!
And I'm Neil Ronahan, and I'm also playing this game, which, at least thus far, I'm probably about a third of the way into, or I've played a third of the amount that Justin has played, because I'm about 7 hours in, and you're low 20s, right?
Yeah, low 20s. I'm not sure quite how long it is. Hopefully it's not in the Persona 3 kind of range, but yeah.
But yeah, so we're a good chunk into the game, and we will have the review up next week, but we figured we'd give you a little tease of talking about the game as where we are now, and chatting about the early parts of the game. So I guess, Justin, what were your, like, I guess what kind of background do you have with the Mega Ten series?
Well, I have a confession. This is the first Mega Ten game I've really dug into. And Megaton's always been one of those franchises that I'll play a little bit of a game at a friend's house, or I'll rent a game, and I've always wanted to be able to sink my teeth into it, but I've just never really had a great opportunity to. I just got done watching my girlfriend play all of Persona 4, you know. And so I've been chomping at the bit for a great opportunity to just get into it. And this is my first, like, real foray, you know, in depth into playing one of the games, and I'm really enjoying it so far.
Yeah. I mean, as far as on my end, I played Persona 3, the Fez edition, back on PS2. And that's kind of it. Like, I've dabbled a little bit. Well, I dabbled a little bit basically until this year, where I kind of, like, had some sort of love affair with Atlus, because I love the crap out of Etrian Odyssey 4, which isn't related to Megaton, but it's still an Atlus RPG. And then I played Soul Hackers, which is a Saturn game that got remade for 3DS, which was okay, but, like, horrendously dated, because it's a game that came out on the Saturn, like, 15 years ago. And then I started playing this game, and it just kind of, like... Yeah, all those concepts that always seemed interesting in the Megaton games, and it's just a lot more modern, and it's a lot more friendly. Like, a lot more of the game is kind of, like, I guess more explanations are packed into it, but the explanations aren't being forced on you. You can choose to look at them if you want to.
A big thing for me is games that respect my time, and Megaton 4 really does respect your time. I mean, everything's quick and snappy. You can save wherever you want. You can get in. I mean, it's a huge game, but you can still get in there and play for 10, 15 minutes, feel like you got something done, save, and quit.
Yep, definitely. I mean, I've been binging a little more on it, so I haven't really experienced that as much. But I see the possibilities there. I mean, mainly because you can save anywhere, which is integral for a portable game, Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon. Mm-hmm. And then just also how they have the explanations for everything. Like, the Demon Fusion, if you're not familiar with these series, it's a huge part of all these games, where you usually have a main character that is, like, your avatar, and you build him up and get new abilities and stuff. And then in most of these games, you also have this, like, cast of demons that you accrue by playing the game. Like, you'll be in a battle, and then you'll have the option to talk to a demon, and then you have to try to convince them by either, you know, saying the right thing to a question, or giving them maka, which is the money in this world. So that way then they join you, and then you can use them as a fighter and level them up. And then when you get more demons, you can fuse two or more demons together to make a better demon, usually.
Right. So, I mean, essentially, a lot like, what was that game on the PS1? Monster Rancher?
Yeah. Jade Cocoon.
Yeah, so, like, it also feels, the whole thing, like, feels like a really adult Pokemon game, in a way, you know? I was kind of worried about the conversation mechanic, because I was thinking, well, how in-depth is this going to be? I mean, is this just going to feel like I have to answer arbitrary questions? And they've really done an excellent job of making it so I feel like the demons have personality.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you essentially are just answering a list of arbitrary questions to see which ones you get right.
But it's funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's written well, and you really feel like you're, you know, conversing with this demon that has its own little personality, in a way.
I think my favorites so far have been when it'll be like, the demon will ask you, like, who's stronger, demons or humans? And it'll just be, like, three options that all say demons. Or there was another one that I got. I'm trying to think of what it was. It was more recently.
I got one where they told me to kneel or something like that, and my only options were submit, all three of them. You know, and of course they rag on you for submitting or saying demons are stronger or whatever, but it's your only option.
Yeah, but there was one where it was like, you know, the demon asked me, like, what's the meaning of life? And I answered the response that was, I'll tell you it. And then the demon was just like, are you like the leader of a religious cult or something? Like, oh man, I gotta check this out. What religion are you from?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I also like that they made it static. And I think there's definitely some temptation to kind of make every demon sort of random. But if you know how a specific demon reacts, like, I've learned which demons don't like me to be completely open and just say yes and give them everything they want. I mean, there's certain demons that you learn over time. Like, these guys, you need to refuse them certain things or they'll think you're weak. And they just sort of develop as you go through the game. And it's really exciting to be like, oh, I know how this guy thinks. And he'll ask me a question that I haven't answered before, but I know what he wants me to say.
And I was actually reading some interviews with the, you know, the Japanese development team behind this game back when it came out in Japan. And they were talking about how the one thing that they want to emphasize people to do is to make sure they always use Demon Fusion, because that's kind of the way to get better demons, as yeah. opposed to just, like, picking one that you like and sticking with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I found that really rewarding in doing it, because you go into the submenu where you do all the Demon Fusion, and you have recommended ones. You can search for specific, like, demons. You can see mm-hmm. how to make different demons, and then look for, you know, either... Like, because once you have a demon join your team, then you can also, like, pay money to get that demon back.
Right, if,
like,
you can just summon them straight yeah. from the compendium.
And they just have all these different options for it, and all these different ways to kind of see, like, okay, what demon do I want? What skill do I want? They have, like, it's a very robust search filter in the Demon Compendium in this game. And then a bunch of, like, FAQs about, like, okay, what should I be doing with Demon Fusion? Mm-hmm. And it's just nice because that's all built in the game, whereas my past experience with Mega 10 games was kind of like, well, I guess I'll see what happens when I fuse the... Oh, he sucks. Why'd I do this?
I feel the same way. I'm one of the people that I sort of get attached to a party, and yeah. I'll realize I've played 4 hours and not fused a single demon. And I keep just like, I get them, and then I have to get new ones, so I fuse just enough to keep an empty slot, and then I'll give in and be like, all right, I got to fuse something, and I'll fuse everything I can and come out with a much better
yep.
party by the end of it. You know, yeah. So it's definitely, like you said, you have to be fusing all the time. Don't get attached to them. You can summon them again later. Just yeah. keep on fusing all the time.
So what else about this game? I really like the combat system, because it yes. does that nice thing that I've seen, well, Etrian Odyssey 4 did it, and it's even something that's like an Earthbound, too, where it's like when you're with a low-level enemy, okay, it's not like Earthbound where you can just skip over it, but... Like, there's an area that you go to early on called, like, the Naraku or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically this thing that you go down different layers of it, and not until later in the game can you kind of skip over it. So you'll, like, be going to the fourth level, and you'll have to go through 1, 2, 3 before then, and it's low-level enemies. It's a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
But you can just go into the battle and tap R, and then it'll auto-battle, and then just go through it really, really quickly, which isn't... I always like those features, because it doesn't waste my time.
Definitely.
With, you know, going through bullshit random battles.
What I really like about the auto battle is it's so quick to jump in and out of it. So if I'm, you know, if I know, like, all right, I need to, this specific demon in this battle is a little too strong, so I'm going to fight him normally, and then halfway through, tap the R yep. button and just let them finish up. That's yeah. so nice. It's so nice. I mean, I'm definitely shocked. I mean, genuinely shocked at the amount of content they've packed into this game.
Yeah. Because then you have a story that seems, as far as from talking to you, it just keeps on going and going.
Yeah.
and then you have a lot of side missions to go to as well. They even mm-hmm. have DLC, which I've heard people complain about a lot.
Mm.
But for me, at least looking what's going to be available at launch, which we still don't have access to that, we might be able to check it out and let you guys know what it's all about before the game comes out on July 16th. But who knows? But I mean, it's got stuff where they have, like, free different hairstyles for your protagonists.
Right. It's, from what I saw, I think there was an armor set and some other basic cosmetic things.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, there's more challenge quests than I think I could complete in yeah. a reasonable amount of time at all.
And I think some of the later DLCs are challenge quests that add to it.
Right. I mean, the main story and a few side quests here and there have been more than enough to fill my time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're in the low 20s right now, and it doesn't look like you're finished yet.
No,
and I'm about seven plus hours, and it's wonderful. It's a very, very delightful game.
Right. I mean, what I really enjoy, specifically talking about the combat system, is that as you, like, it doesn't get monotonous. I mean, very rarely am I like, oh gosh, another random battle. Okay, let's get through this as quick as possible, because they're all so different. I mean, between talking to demons, fighting demons, and then sometimes whenever you kill a demon, they'll engage you in a conversation yeah. and be like, oh, no, don't kill me. I'll join you or give you money or an item. I mean, it keeps the battles varied enough that really no two play out the same. So it keeps it from that sort of monotony that turn-based RPGs fall into, which is, okay, I got to run across the map and go through 50 random battles that are going to be really boring and low level.
Indeed.
So, I don't know. I was, because normally in RPGs, I really get burned out on the random battle thing. You know, when you're like, all right, here's 100 more random battles in a row, and then I get to progress the story. You know, I find myself, very rarely am I actually running from the, you know, because you get the on-screen representations of the monsters that you can sort of Dragon Quest on the DS remake style, where you can kind of run from them. I mean, very rarely am I trying to avoid any of them or flee from them or anything like that.
Yeah, because it's not like it's the case where, you know, a random battle is going to kill you, usually. And right. It's also that it's not like they're going to be this huge time-consuming affair. It feels really well-tuned for how the kind of, you know, the I mean, they're not even really random battles because you do the on-screen representation.
Right.
But that sort of thing, very rarely do you feel like, oh, there's way too many of this, like, because you can either avoid it, you can run past it if you want to, or they're just not that often enough that it becomes a pain in the ass.
Right. And it's I don't know, it's really great. I mean, there's usually, even when you're going through low-level areas, you'll very often run into a demon that you needed for a fusion that you didn't want to spend the maka on, or something you just never got the first time through because it was too high level. You know, I do want to ask you about the difficulty, because the Mangaten games are notoriously difficult. You know, Persona's kind of the more accessible series. Are you still playing it on normal difficulty?
No, I am not. I pissed out pretty early on.
I did, almost immediately. I mean, I got a little ways into Naraku, and I was like, well,
I think it was when I first went to the third level that I turned on the easy mode for good.
Mm-hmm. I've been on easy for the bulk of my play experience, and from what I can tell, it made it a much more enjoyable experience for me personally.
Yeah.
But I'm not really into hugely difficult games. Like, I'm not.
Neither am I.
I'm just looking to play something and have a good time. I don't need that. Like, if I've got spreadsheets in front of me and I'm saving and loading every 10 minutes.
You're not going to be playing EVE Online anytime soon.
Right. Exactly. Exactly that. So it's interesting to me. Have they included an easy mode in previous Megaten games, or
I know that Etrian Odyssey 4 had an easier, well, I think they called it like casual mode. And basically, the one difference, and this is one thing that I think is kind of funny, because it seems that most Atlus games are just hard as balls. Mm-hmm. So the easy mode is even still pretty challenging.
Yeah. No,
in Etrian Odyssey 4, that's a game where, like, if your party falls, then, like, you revert to your last save and lose all of your progress. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the easy mode, basically, if your party falls, and it's like you just go back to town and lose some money. And like, I'm like, that's like every other game ever.
Right.
Except for this hard-ass game.
I also thought it was interesting how they use play coins in the game.
I don't even think I've run into using play coins in the game yet.
Well, when you die, you're given the option of you can pay X amount of maka to resurrect, or you can pay it in play coins.
Oh,
or you can just or you can just decline and say no and just load from wherever you were. But I'm not sure how they pick the amount, because I mean, one time I went to resurrect and he goes, "All right, that'll be 9 play coins." I'm like, 9? No.
Oddly specific.
But in another time, it was, I think, 2. So I'm not quite sure how they set those requirements, or maybe it's how long it's been since you've died, or I have no idea.
It's probably the people in the underworld are just like, man, I really need to get that other Nintendo item in my Animal Crossing store. So
yeah, guys, we need to get our fortune cookies. We need some play coins.
I need at least 4. That's my bare minimum. More than that would be good, because then, you know, if you don't die tomorrow, then I'll be good for tomorrow, too.
Right. But I thought that was cool. I mean, that's... I don't know. It was just an interesting thing for me. It's something that you don't, it's not your hard earned in game currency. Yeah. I mean, if you're someone like me, like I think I have, until Animal Crossing, I had 290 something play coins. Now, post Animal Crossing, it's dwindling.
Yeah.
But
I benefit from, I bring my 3DS with me to work and I have to park in like the ass backward of nowhere. So I'll have it in my bag and I'll use my play coins in Animal Crossing or whatever, and I'll be at 300 by the end of the day usually.
Yeah, my girlfriend leaves her 3DS at home all the time, and I always come in the living room and she's shaking it trying to get play coins for her fortune cookie. I'm the same way. I take it everywhere with me, so I've always got maxed out steps every day.
And have you dabbled with the Street Pass at all? I mean, not that we're going to be street passing anybody right. with it if we ever do anyway. Yeah.
Even then, I'm in the Southwest, so I don't, yeah. there's probably not another Megaton player for 1,000 miles.
For me, you'll just see me like running on the streets of New York being like, Megaton, my demon's got to see what you're doing. He needs to grow a level.
I've messed with it. As far as I can tell, you can it has a little player card with some stats on it.
Yeah, and, it shows like your level, how far, yeah. How many hours you've played.
And you can attach a demon to it, and then whenever you street pass someone, they'll get that demon.
And then your demon will level up as well. Yeah.
So, of course, I haven't done anything with it. I'm hoping, you know, I am in college, so hopefully there's a bunch of geeks on campus yeah. whenever school starts back up, and I can go get some street passes, but... It looks fun. I mean, if you're in a populated enough area or potentially yeah. a college student or potentially someone that, you know, lives in Japan and gets street passes all the time. Then...
I bet you this is really fun in Japan. To
yeah,
get the
it's probably great there.
I remember when we were at E3, the Kim Keller, who reviewed Soul Hackers for us, where that also has a street pass thing where it's kind of like you have a specific demon that when you street pass people, like builds mm-hmm. up and evolves and stuff. And she like peed herself when she found out that she actually got a street pass for it at E3.
Of course, the one yeah. other Soul Hackers player. Yep. What the only thing I don't really like about the street pass is that you sort of have to dedicate a demon to yep. it. Because if you have a demon registered in your street pass, then you can't have it in your party. And obviously, it's probably not going to be your best demon because you can't have it in your party. So usually it's a throwaway demon that you keep around just for your street pass. And because of that, I mean, again, neither me nor you is going to street pass anyone anytime soon. So I ended up just being like, well, I need that slot in my demon reserve. Yeah. I feel like they should have made it to where it comes out of your inventory and is put separately. But
yeah.
Regardless,
yeah, I definitely agree because it is. I feel like there's such a limit to how the street passing will even work. Because you're going to have people not putting their best out there because you lose access to them in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like, I mean, if you're in an area where you street pass regularly, it would be cool to, hey, every day you street pass a couple of other demons and you're working on this is your street pass demon. But if you're not in that area, you're probably just not ever going to have a demon attached to it. So even when you do street pass someone, you're not going to get anything.
or at least I wish there was maybe like an easier way to do it at least because... In order to, like, you know, access Street Pass and put your demon into it, you need to, like, you know, open up the menu, go to a submenu, and then go to another menu, yeah. and then
it's
add in your
tedious.
Demon. Because if they made it, maybe it was like, okay, I'm probably not going to play the game for a couple days. I'll put this demon as my Street Pass demon and have it, like, when you load into the game, it's just like, oh, do you want to bring this guy back into your party? And then when you save the game, well, I mean, it's in the save menu where the Street Pass menu is, so
right.
that would have been nicer, I think.
Yeah. Something simpler where you could just kind of check them off or not, you know, would have been much better. But, you know, what are you going to do? I guess move to Japan and then yeah. street pass everyone there.
Well, we'll wrap up this debut segment of Shin Megami Tensei 4. And I'm going to make my bold statement that playing this game kind of reminds me of how Xenoblade was for Japanese RPGs.
I thought I had some Xenoblade in my head while I was playing it as well.
I mean, for me, it's not so much that, like, oh, like, it doesn't necessarily play like Xenoblade, but it's just the kind of thing where it's, like, this style of game that I've played a lot before, and then this is something that isn't really wholly different, but it just does it, like, smartly and so well.
Right.
That it's kind of, you know, it's worth propping up there and being like, hey, do you like RPGs? You should play this game.
Yeah, definitely. Like the best aspects of PS2 era JRPGs, but streamlined so they're not so frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you've always been put off by Atlus games because of their frustrating difficulty at times and sometimes their brutality, then Megaton 4 might be the one to play.
Yeah. I mean, like Xenoblade, I think whenever it came out, I called it the best PS2 JRPG that I never got a chance to play. And I think I would group Megaton 4 in that same category.
Yeah. If you have any questions about the game, we're going to be doing another segment next week. So either drop a line in the comments and on the website, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Enron10. You can also bother Justin if you want to at, what is it, at defrustrations.
Defrustrations, that's it.
Yep. I'm really excited to play more of this game. That's probably what I'll do after we're done this podcast.
Yeah, the second I stop this, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, I already did my Animal Crossing for the day, so now it's Megaton time.
There you go.
All right, thank you for listening.
Bye.
All right, and that will do it for episode 92 of Connectivity. As always, you can send us your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. If you get a chance to rate and review us on iTunes, that'd be great. And you should follow all of us on Twitter. Go to nintendoworldreport.com, look for the Twitter sidebar on the right-hand side of the page, and you'll find all of our usernames there. We'll see you next week.